During last night's city council meeting, the special RAG-RI ordinance passed, having to do with all the different rules and regulations that are going to be in place for RAG-RI during those 2 days, vendors, public health. Just kind of talk a little bit about what that is and what that means for people in Knoxville and the community that may be listening that want to be involved in the RAG-RI festivities with a vendor and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for a little while with RAG-RI coming up. I mean, it's a big event. It's not something that occurs on a regular basis within a community. We've been talking with the RAG-RI organizers, and we've kind of looked at how other communities have handled vendors, both local and out-of-town vendors coming in, both food vendors and non-food vendors. We modeled an ordinance similar to what other communities throughout the state have passed over the last several years. And basically what it does is it establishes a special permit required for a RAG-RI event. So this is separate from our normal vendor permit ordinance that most vendors have throughout the year, say for nationals or any other race events or any other special events taking place in the community. So anyone that would like to set up a vendor stand on the city streets outside of their normal business are required to obtain a special permit to do that with RAG-RI. These are a little bit more intense than the normal, especially for food vendors. The Department of Health will be doing inspections and those kinds of things to make sure everything is being done in accordance with food safety and et cetera. We also adjusted the rates for this one event so they're more consistent with what other communities are paying. There's a lot that the city is going to be doing and incurring cost-wise to help put on the event of RAG-RI. The vendor permits is one way that most communities help recapture some of the cost expended by the community. It's not that the city wants to make a lot of money off the event. We simply want to recuperate what we're spending in it, so we break even. So there are permits that are required for a food vendor and a non-food vendor. There's also a different rate structure for a for-profit and a non-profit. So just a couple of examples. Let's say that we have a restaurant downtown. It's a bricks and mortar restaurant. They're on the square. They can still serve food from their kitchen and their dining room. They're not required to have a permit. However, if they want to open up a booth out on the street and sell food there, then they'd be required to have a permit. Likewise, for any churches or local nonprofit organizations, I mean, they're welcome to host a breakfast or a dinner at their church. And as long as they're within the building confines, they're not required to have a permit. But if they're opening up a tent downtown and serving breakfast or something like that, then that would require securing a permit. And basically what the ordinances did last night is it sets a lot of the ground rules for RAG-RI, how the city will handle it and what's required moving forward on multiple aspects. And again, the goal is to keep the environment a safe and enjoyable environment for the citizens and for the community. And again, to lessen the burden of the cost that the community could potentially bear by recapturing some of those fees and revenues, et cetera, to help pay for the event. The fees that are established right now are very comparable to other communities throughout the stops in RAG-RI. Actually, I think we're not the most expensive. We're not the cheapest either, but we're not the most expensive. Now it's approved. We've had a lot of calls here over the last month and a half regarding vendors that want to get set up and get organized. And now that we have this done, we do have an application process. And so now they can begin applying and getting set for RAG-RI.
So locally, if anyone has any questions about that, they're welcome to stop in City Hall. I'm sure it might be on the website soon, that sort of thing.
That's correct. Yeah, we'll have information up on the website probably today or tomorrow. And then obviously, anyone is welcome to stop by City Hall and ask questions, and we'd be happy to help and get everyone up and ready to go.
Another ordinance that was discussed last night that hasn't had the first reading yet even, but it will be discussed more in the upcoming meetings, an I&I inflow and infiltration ordinance having to do with sewer lines as the city gets ready to rehab a lot of the sewer. You guys are going to line them, that sort of thing. Talk a little bit about what this proposed ordinance would do and how it would impact citizens.
Yeah, again, a lot of this goes back to the Department of Natural Resources as we've been talking with them and trying to renew our permit with our wastewater treatment plant. I think the community is very aware that we've been discussing required expansions, et cetera. A lot of that precipitated by the amount of stormwater that we have go into our system after every rain event. And so DNR has required us to address the issue. We had talked about upgrades to the wastewater treatment facility as well as installation of a retention basin. And staff has been able to effectively negotiate with the DNR. We understand that we have some peak flows that warrant a certain size of plant, but if you'll let us decrease the amount of stormwater entering into our system and therefore going into the wastewater treatment facility, we feel that we can decrease that peak number, which would therefore decrease the level of wastewater treatment plant improvements that are needed, as well as the size of a retention basin that's needed, which would effectively reduce the cost to the city, because we're talking a big amount of money to do these projects. Also, as the community is aware, we've got an agreement now with the Department of Natural Resources that we're going to line all the city mains, which is going to ensure that there's a dramatic decrease in infiltration and inflow into the city's system, at least through the city's infrastructure. The other half of it, however, is the private lines, the connection between the house and the city sewer main. And DNR is also requiring us to address that as well. We have a couple of different programs in place. We did have discussion with the council last night regarding an improved ordinance to help address that. And it'll be read for the first time in the next council meeting, and it'll require three readings as well. Whether or not the council chooses to waive a reading in the future, I don't know. But basically, what it's going to do is it's going to require an inspection by city staff in specific areas of the community. One area in particular, we've been working on inspections in that area over the last 10 years, and those are pretty much complete. And what we're looking at doing is we're trying to get roof drains disconnected from private sewer lines. We're trying to get foundation drains, sump pumps, any of those kinds of things that allows for rainwater to get into the private line and thereby ending up in the city's system. We're trying to get that off. And we have several programs in place that have been in place for several years, actually, to assist financially with that. And if anyone has any questions about that, they're welcome to come to City Hall and talk with staff about what some of those programs are available and what financial assistance is available to do that. But one of the key things the ordinance will do is, if we run into individuals that have connections that are not appropriate and they're not interested in using any of the programs the city has to disconnect it, they're not being cooperative in having it disconnected, the ordinance puts in place a $50 a month fee that will be assessed until such time as they have that removed. So this ordinance puts a little bit more penalty for not cooperating with the rest of the community. And again, the overall goal isn't necessarily to be mean. A lot of it's required by DNR. And this is an approach that has been used very effectively to get many of the community members in compliance with what the DNR is requiring. And so again, we've looked at what's been effective in other communities and what has worked well and try to duplicate that here. But the overall goal really is to work together to decrease the amount of stormwater that's going into the system, to decrease that overall cost for the entire community. I know we've heard a lot from the community regarding the amount that people pay in sewer bills. That's why staff worked really hard this budget year to balance the sewer budget without an increase. You know, another thing that was on the agenda last night was the next step in canceling that 5% increase that was already approved to go effective July 1 of this year. And we're hearing what the public's saying, we're trying to decrease that, but we also need the help of the public to address these issues that the DNR is requiring us to address, so that those future costs and potential increases are minimized as much as we can for all the community, whether it's a resident, whether it's an industrial business or commercial business. We all have an interest in working together to address these issues. The EPA and the Department of Natural Resources have changed their stance on this. You know, several years ago when these houses were built, it was okay to have those kinds of connections. In fact, they were encouraged. But now the federal government and the state government have changed their position on that, and they're requiring us to do that. And again, we're trying to find solutions that minimize the cost to everybody. And so we need everybody to participate in that.